Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where frontline sales leaders teach you how to build and scale an outbound sales team. Welcome back to the Predictable Revenue Podcast. I'm your host, Colin Stewart. Today, I'm joined by Lauren Bailey, but you can call her LB. I will too. She's the founder of a couple companies, including Factor8 and Girls Club. Don't go to girlsclub.com. It's a totally different place.
We are girlsclub.com.
There we go. We had one of her colleagues, Margaret Weniger, on the show a month and a bit ago, although entrepreneur time, I'm not really sure when it was. I know it was this year. We talked about diversity on sales teams, and it was one of our best engaged episodes this year. So Lauren, welcome to the show. Expectations are very high. Don't forget.
I love that. Welcome. Don't screw it up.
Yeah.
I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. I'm really excited because we're talking about confidence in sales. And this is one of those fundamental things that if you've got it wrong, like everything else means nothing. If you're following the right processes, if you've got great structure to your calls, if you know how to handle all the objections, if you don't say it, if you're not believing what you're saying, if you're not presenting that you're confident in your answers, all bets are off.
It's so true, isn't it? It's sales is a confident sport. How life is a confident sport, but it's not something that we talk about very much. And it wasn't until I found a Girls Club this last year that I realized it was an awakening for me. Like, this is what I'm passionate about. I grew up a really shy, underconfident girl, and I struggled. I struggled a lot. And I learned how to be really brave in sales, but I didn't believe it. I didn't feel it. And I've learned that helping reps build confidence, helping young managers build confidence, helping women build confidence, the results are exponential. When you focus there, the outcome is tremendous. And it's not just at work then, right? It's like the color gets turned on from black and white in your whole damn life.
It's a real Wizard of Oz moment when you realize
the impact. Yeah. All those doubts and fears like shrivel up like the little feet underneath Dorothy's house.
Yeah. Yeah. For those that haven't watched it, because I'm realizing I'm not a spring chicken anymore. Basically the movie goes from black and white to color about, I don't know, a couple minutes in. And it was the first movie that was in color ever. I want to say,
it was right up there. Damn, we sound old, Colin.
But I've been working on that one for a long time. The whole sounding old thing. Comes with confidence, maybe.
There you go. Let's say it. Let's say that.
Perfect. So before we jump into, what kills it and how do we build it, how do you define confidence?
It's hard to define confidence because it's a feeling, right? So I'd like to do it two different ways. The first is confidence is that inner knowing. It's that feeling that I'm on a firm foundation and I believe fully in who I am and what I'm doing or what I'm selling or what I'm about to do. It's almost a lack of nerves. The second way I would define it is confidence versus bravery. So bravery is when you feel nervous to do something, but like you go put on your cape and your mask and you do it anyway, right? You suit up, you put on my big girl pants, and I dial this on anyway. Or, I'm scared to death to ask for the raise, but I got it together. My palms are sweating. I'm going to just do it anyway. Right. And there's a place for bravery in our lives. I think a lot of confidence starts with bravery, that fake it till you make it. But the difference is that the confidence is, I know I deserve that raise. And these people at the other end of the sales call are going to be lucky to talk to me. And so I don't mean that the nerves totally go away, but this drastic reduction happens when you're feeling confident. And as I've experienced that in my own life, it just gives me so much more time and space to, you quit sweating and worrying and being afraid of so much. It's like getting 10 extra hours in the day.
Yeah. It's amazing the impact that your brain has on your energy levels, right? There's a number of studies that show that the brain uses a tremendous amount of energy. Being on sales calls all day, that is one of the most exhausting things. I've hung drywall for a living, and being on 12 sales calls, I come home and I'm like,
you're more tired.
Yeah. I'm more tired. I can't even, like, I don't even want to go for a run because there's just like no energy left in the brain.
Right. Compared to drywall. I love that. Cause that's serious, man. Hanging drywall is right up there. That's like rock climbing, but in reverse, you gotta hold it up. I totally agree with that.
I go teach hockey. So like I had tons of energy.
Yeah. But it is, it's exhausting. And when you're confident, it's not quite as draining, right? Bravery, when you suit up and do it anyway, you push through the fear, it burns out. That's why we need to focus on building confidence. So something's interesting has happened in the last few years is we have brought on this SDR, BDR role in the last 5 years, right? It's just skyrocketed. And it's very smart to have the division of labor. But what's happening is our very youngest, least experienced sellers get put into this role. And they come in and they let's be honest, they don't get a lot of proper training. They don't get a lot of, we don't put a lot of time and money. We throw scripts at these people and they do their best and they bring their bravery every day to work and they burn out. And unfortunately they're leaving sales because they haven't had this wonderful taste of it. But the average lifespan of an inside sales rep used to be 2 years and then it was 18 months. And the last time I looked, I think it was 14 to 16 months. So if we don't build confidence through skills and experience and coaching and all the different cool things we're going to talk about today, then what we find is bravery and a lack of belief. And they just, they burn out and out they go.
100%. And it just in the same way that, you know, when you start hanging drywall, when I started hanging drywall, it was hard work. And by the end, I was hanging drywall for 9 hours and then I go and I teach hockey at nights.
Yeah, no big deal.
It's the same with the sort of the mental work that we're talking about here is initially it's really hard, but your brain is, you know, air quotes, a muscle that you can train and develop. And once you're comfortable with these things, you're able to handle the same amount of work.
Yep.
Without even breaking a sweat, without even raising your heart rate.
Right. But if you don't bring if you don't bring your heart, if you don't bring your gut, if you don't bring your mind with that muscle, then you're still putting on a mask every day when you go to work. You're suiting up to go fake it for 8 hours. And I don't care what you're doing. That's freaking exhausting. Yeah. Right? That's like going to a cocktail party with your husband and a bunch of people you hate. You can't sign up to do that every day for 8 hours.
100%.
Yeah.
So before we jump into how to build it, can you talk to me about what kills it? What are some things that are just, that take you back into being brave and remove you from that sort of zone of confidence?
Yeah. I think one of the biggest mistakes we make as sales leaders is scripting. We have a rigorous interview process to find people who are curious and who are quick to connect to people and who are competitive and who played a sport in college for 2.4 years. And, you know, I mean, we've got this, everybody's got the same mold that we've all had to throw we had to throw it out because we're scraping the bottom of the barrel, right? It's hard to find great talent. So we work our butts off to find great talent. And then we sit them down and say, just say this. Like, who cares about their personality if we're just telling them what? Like, I think that that's a killer. It says, I don't trust you to have a conversation. You probably won't understand it anyway. Why don't you just use my words? And Colin, you're a smart, brilliant guy who knows this industry. Fantastic, right? You could write me the best words in the world, but they're not my words. I'm never going to feel confident using your script. Mm-hmm. And vice versa. So we're not investing in them. And that's the second mistake is best practice companies budget about $1,800 per year per rep, right? Our tools budget is 5X our development budget. And yet if you look at who we're bringing in and their lack of education and experience, they don't need more tools, man. A rep never left because they didn't have enough tools. But they are leaving because of a lack of development. It's been the number one reason that reps say they're leaving companies for 5 or 6 straight years now.
Yeah.
And the number one thing they're looking for. So that's mistake number two is we don't invest in them. We don't teach them. How do you feel confident selling somebody else's product when 800 things are new to you and you're not getting the proper training? So those are definitely two ways we kill it.
It sounds like it's sort of like buying your reps Porsches and expecting them to drive faster, but not teaching them how to drive. Right. And you just unleash those people on the road. They're just going to cause mayhem because they have this really high powered machine in front of them.
Oh, I love the way you say that because and now add in the fact that 5 years ago, you could get yourself a decent driver. You could get somebody in their 20s, if we're going to use the car, right? Like, I've been driving for 4 or 5 years. I've driven a couple different kinds of cars. And now you're taking somebody with a learner's permit. Like, that's who we're hiring, and we're giving them a Porsche and saying, you know, try not to wreck the joint. Good luck out there. Drive faster every single day.
Yeah.
And I got to say, I think the third mistake that we make, and it's a product of the industry. It's like, none of us are feeling malicious about this. Like, this is just what happens. It's not like we get up every day and say, I'm going to make some people feel like shit today at work.
Hey, but, speak for yourself.
That would make the day a little interesting, wouldn't it? But the other thing we do is we are growing so fast in inside sales, right? It's like 14 or 20X today, what it is field sales in other areas, that our managers were reps 5 minutes ago. And they're not exactly sure how to do it either. So we've got sort of this cycle that's happening of, I didn't get much training and I figured it out and I'm a superstar. So now there's 20 people that report to me and I'm just going to treat them like I was treated. Why don't you just do it my way? And here's what I said. And it's that vicious cycle that we're not nurturing our most expensive and our hardest to find resource. And that's our people.
I both hate that attitude of, well, I figured it out the hard way, and so you should.
Sink or swim?
Yeah, and have that attitude at some times. It's a hard one to get rid of.
Well, our age, we came up that way, right? My first sales job and sales management job, I got like a phone book and a tape recorder, and I walked there uphill in the snow. So
in my grandfather's pajamas.
Bare feet with holes. And yeah. So it was okay then, right? Because there were plenty more of us in the sea, and there aren't today. It's really tough. And I think there's professional new hires out there who will skip from one company to the other, to the other, to the other. And I'll just spend 3 or 4 months in training and until I am supposed to hit quota. And then I'll go to my buddy's place over here, cause they don't make them really work, or they all get warm leads until I get there.
Yeah.
And then I figured, oh crap, this is bad too. So we're going to have to do a better job at keeping our talent and developing them. And I think that the great news about that is that it's one hell of a differentiator. When we find companies who do it, their people hit quota twice as fast. They stay 2 to 3 times longer. And that makes a difference in their, you know, in their bottom line. Hell yeah. In their customer experience.
For sure. So now that we understand it's super important, we absolutely need to do this. Can you talk to me about how do we build this?
How do we build confidence? So, well, we're talking about baby reps first, right? So I'm a brand new rep, and I say it with love, my baby reps who are listening right now, right? I say it because I have been there and I have had teams and families of 20 something salespeople. And I want you to love sales because it's an amazing career. But if you're in a rep mill where you're being thrown, if you're being given a Porsche and there's a garage of wrecked cars and it becomes obvious to you in the background, then here are some things your company can do to help. So number one, I like to call skill building in the area of first base skills. I think that new reps need more wins. So I'm going to use a couple really bad intermixed sports analogies right now. So the first one is first base skills. What do I mean by that? Well, it's a throwback to Moneyball, right? Do you remember this? Billy Bean, AKA Brad Pitt.
Yep. Yeah.
Right.
I'm glad you went the baseball direction. I thought you were going a different direction with this. And I was like, we have an R rating on the podcast, not an X rating. So we'll keep it clean.
I've only sworn once so far. We're like 10 minutes in. I'm doing great.
We can swear. That's
okay. Yeah, I was raised by a pack of wolves. And by that, I mean a bunch of guys in call centers in the 90s. Anyway, so first base skills. So Billy Bean basically spent all of his money and his budget, not on people could hit home runs, not on the pitcher, not on the outfielders, the third baseman. It was low level, if you will, no name talent who could get on first base. That was their skill. Now, everybody thought he was crazy until you see the results afterwards, because you can't get home if you can't get on first. So we used to laud the closers of the world. And I think that's exactly opposite in phone sales, especially today. Mm-hmm. We have to celebrate the openers, the people who can get the conversations. So if you look at a rep's first 90 days on the job, they're probably going to come home and say, I could be replaced by an outgoing voicemail, right? Like, how many people do you get to talk to? And then when you do, it's, oh, crap, what do I say? Right? I mean, I've walked up to so many reps in their first few months on the job. They have one of their first 20 calls. I'm like, how'd it go? And they just look at you because they have no idea, right? The game's just moving fast at that point. You're not sure. You're nervous as heck. So first base skills are how to leave a great voicemail so somebody will actually call you back, right? Voicemails are cool again because nobody freaking leaves them, but they are a chance to brand your company, brand yourself. Every single time you leave a voicemail, your chances of getting callback are 10% higher. You can and should be getting 5 to 15 voicemail callbacks every single week with a standard outbound cadence. And most people aren't, but it's possible. And those are 5 or 10 conversations you wouldn't have had otherwise. And it's a win when somebody calls you back. That's something to celebrate.
That's huge.
Right? The next first base skill I love are introductions. So somebody answers the phone. It was an accident. I thought it was my kid's daycare. I pick it up. You start pitching at me. What do? Get the hell off the phone as fast as possible. So I like to encourage new managers to count conversations. How many calls did your reps have today over 2 minutes? Because a voicemail is about a minute and a half, no matter how you slice it. So that introduction skill gets them more at-bats. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same with brush-offs. You get a good intro, you get them talking, they're talking for a minute or two, and they're like, hey, I'm not the guy, I don't have time, I don't give a damn, right? They're basically just saying, I don't want to talk to you. If we can help reps get around that, again, it's more conversation. So the conversation, the chance to sell is first base.
Cool.
And at FactorRate, we've been focusing on that for about 10 years and practicing it, and it builds confidence, it builds happiness and success, and don't we all just want to feel successful at work when you can come in and get a win? So the flip side of that, let's flip to football. Typically an SDR BDR role, which is where so many of our new people start, what we celebrate is the meeting. And that's the rep's whole job, right? So it's basically like putting them in their own end zone and saying, throw Hail Mary passes. And I want you to throw 15 to 20 a day. I think the average is like 16.5 conversations, depending on what enablement tools you have. And you're going to get one every 1 to 3 days. And we're going to celebrate the crap out of it. It's going to be great. Unless they don't show, and then we're going to make you feel like shit. So that's long, man. That's tiring. That's icing your arm at night. That's burning out. But that's why we have first downs in American football for you Canadian friends out there, right? Like,
we have first downs too.
The first down is celebrating the 10 yards,
yep.
Right? So it's the conversation. It's the callback. It's inviting somebody else to a meeting. It's finding little wins to celebrate is a great way to build confidence for new reps and then giving them the skills to do that.
I was just going to add, we have first downs as well. We just don't have fourth downs and also an audience because not many people watch Canadian football as American football, the NFL.
I went to college with Kurt Warner. It was basically like the only cool thing about where I went to college, University of Northern Iowa, and he played Canadian ball for a while.
Nice.
Yes, before he went on to St. Louis Rams and MVP. He was a great, great success story. Small kid from Iowa.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. So anyway, those are a couple ways for new reps to build confidence with them, building those skills and celebrating those wins.
Perfect. And so it's just a matter of making sure you're celebrating the little wins. You're making sure that you're really dialing in those small interactions that they're having every day so that you are getting some positives out of them as opposed to just grinding and being a sort of voicemail as a service bot.
Bingo. Now with a tenured rep, I think it's a little different. With tenured reps, I really like to see us building business acumen and industry acumen so that they're feeling the confidence to have the deeper skills, right? So we're beyond BDR. I might be an AE, a closer, an account manager. And the skills I see lacking most at that level when I'm 2 to 3 years into my sales career, are number one, the business acumen. What's the difference between a COO and a CFO and what they care about? Right? What's the difference between a break-even point and an ROI? What are the industry trends that are happening right now? And how does that, what does that really actually mean? Right? We don't get to hire bunches of reps with business degrees anymore. And so we've got to teach them those skills. Reps aren't asking questions because they're scared to death of being asked one in return. So that's a huge confidence builder for our tenured reps. And the other one I really like to see is the skill of talking about wallet share. I've seen a lot of very tenured reps talk about, let's talk about account managers, right? Oh, I've been working with Colin for 5 years. I know his kids' birthdays. Like, we couldn't have a better relationship, but they don't know what percent of the wallet they're getting. And they're not sure how to back up into that conversation, right? Hey, I was in your wedding, but are you spending money with other people? It can be awkward. So helping them get into those skills and the advanced referral skills. Those are three things that build a ton of confidence in your more tenured reps.
So let's go into that. So the talking. So what are some of the keys when you were talking about wallet share? Because it can be an awkward conversation. This is sort of post-sale. I'm assuming you're talking post-sale, or is this during the sales process?
It's different for every industry, right? So wallet share is a skill that we typically are going to be building with account managers.
Gotcha.
So it would be a post-sale in a SaaS world, somebody who is in customer success, perhaps, right? It's less common in SaaS than you're going to have in industrial, in supply, in OEM, in distribution, in pharma. Those kinds of industries would have more account management and that kind of skill. And the toughest part about it is bringing it up. Like, that's the key, right? It's that instead of just, hey, how's it going? Like, Colin, I know that we've been working together for 5 years and I can't tell you how much I love it, but I need to ask you a couple questions to make sure I really understand your business and that I'm giving you the best service. Could we set a time to do that? Or do you have 20 minutes right now? Yeah, sure. And then we dig in a little bit to asking some of those higher level business questions, that business and that industry acumen. And making sure we really understand what the goals are and who the competitors are, et cetera. Like, that's the hardest part for in most of our experience is that, gee, this is awkward, right? How do I bring up the conversation?
For sure. And so do you go from there to just, so tell me where else you're spending money and why you're cheating on me?
Yeah, exactly. and if it were me to do, that's how I would write my baby script. Right. So what we like to do is give the goals of the conversation, give a couple examples, and then write your own in a way that feels good to you. And then we practice it and we'll go out to the phones and actually have these conversations. And so that's what I would do. And so it'd be like, we've been together for 5 years now. And, you know, the 7-year itch is upon us. I know it can be very tempting to cheat. No, the way we'd like to teach it.
I picture you having this conversation with your husband.
Right. I know it can be tempting, darling. We just got back from the Caribbean. Bikinis abound. The way we like to teach it for them to do is say, now, let's talk a little bit about our business together, right? You've been buying blank and blank and blank from us on a pretty regular basis. And I know that we've talked about category X and category Y in the past, but do you mind if I ask about the business as a whole? What other suppliers are you using for things like blank, blank, and blank? So it's that, I call it the rule of three, which I totally stole from American Pie, right? The rule of three, the guys versus girls. Again, the X rating, so we won't go there. But the idea of the rule of three is you give them an example. If you just say, hey, what other vendors are you using? Oh, no, man, you're the one. That's it. That's all. But if you can explain some of the things that they might be buying from those other vendors. So who are you using for management training, for BDR onboarding, and for your account executives? That gives them an example of what you're talking about.
Gotcha. And so yeah, you're saying men are going to give you three times more examples and
the women will give you three times less.
Gotcha.
Go back and find that clip on YouTube. Anybody who's listening to that right now.
Find that one, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So the key to that whole thing, Colin, is it's a confidence conversation. But once you align yourselves as a business advisor, I really want to make sure I'm doing the right things for your business. It's not a desperate, I want more. sure. Mm. It's okay. Well, let me just get the lay of the land. Who are you buying this from? And who are you buying this from? And who are you buying that from? And talk to me about how you choose them. That's fantastic. And obviously my goal is to earn 100% of your business someday. But I understand that I've got to earn that. So can we talk about how you chose that vendor? What's most important to you? And if there's ever a shot, what I could do to earn a ride is maybe a backup one day or a, right? You work your way in on baby steps. But you can't go into that conversation as another pop culture reference, the reacher. So this one's How I Met Your Mother. Do you ever see that? There's a reacher and a settler in every relationship, right? And if you're going in feeling like the reacher, like, oh, I just want scraps from you. I'm not worthy. I couldn't ask you about what you're spending. It's like you're spending your own dollars and I don't deserve it. And if you feel like that going into it, it's just not gonna work, which is why we don't put brand new reps into that and why it's a skill you want to build with the tenured reps. Once they get the words written down and they practice it two or three times and they see the reaction during class that their customers actually have when they have these conversations, mm-hmm. there it's a light bulb, right? It's just like, it just opens up the floodgates to go and have these, but they've been scared to death to have it. And believe me, they'll be resistant to going in and trying it at first because they believe they need to believe they know everything about their customer. We think we do until we have the conversation.
For sure. And so I love that you're sort of providing them the map, right? You're saying, here's the thing that you need to do. Here's a loose map. And in some ways, when I've onboarded reps or trained reps, I find it's kind of like skiing, right? It's like, here's the map of the mountain and here's what here's what it's going to be like going down this, blue run or this double black diamond run. But nobody really wants to go down that double black until you're riding up the ski lift with somebody and you hear the guy next to you be like, oh man, the mogul's here or the powder there or in between the trees, I found this great jump. And that's the thing. And so the correlation here is understanding, getting that from your customers and from your existing customers that are already doing this. And I've found getting our reps exposed to our case study customers, the ones that are on the other side that have gone down that run and found, oh man, when my rep helped me find this, it provided this value, that value. That for me was a big piece that really helps tie it home and show our reps why we need to be asking these questions. Cause it's the script is certainly one part that helps them understand how to do it. I find this sometimes the motivation of why should I be doing it? I'm not,
100%
feel selfish about it. I was like, I'm obviously, this benefits my commission check.
Yeah. Well, we're right back to scripting again, aren't we? And by the way to pull in another sport. Well done on skiing. So it's instead of giving a script. So here's what you can do. If you're out on the floor, you're a sales director, you're walking over, you're seeing a script that somebody's using, take 5 minutes and break down each section of the script and talk to the rep about what the goal is instead. So why do you think we're asking these questions? What's the goal here? Oh, well, I'm trying to find out if they're qualified. Fantastic. What's the most important thing about being qualified? Oh, well, it's this. Great. How would you ask that question? Right? It's like telling somebody to get off the lift and it's like after 20 feet, turn left. And after 25 more feet, turn right. And it's like instead, if you were to say, listen, you're really trying to get to this first bank of trees. You're going to want to stay on the left side because it's less icy. And the goal is if you can get there, well, for me, it'd be without breaking both legs, but for a skier, right? Maybe it's an amount of time or whatever that might look like.
Yeah. Close your eyes. Don't notice how steep it is and you'll be fine.
Yeah. Scares the crap out of me. I just took ski lessons for the first time last year.
Right on. Being a true blooded Canadian, I ski and play hockey and snowboard. So.
You have to. Yes.
You have to. Yeah.
They kick you out of the country if you don't. Don't they, Colin?
Yeah. We don't have the internet up here. So that's how we keep busy.
Smarter. I got to tell you, I'm trying to move my kids to Canada, get them off the games.
There you go. So I love how we've sort of talked about the sort of mental side of things and then the scripting side of things and sort of I can see it in my head is how you make it. So there's, like you said, like little baby steps, right? Yeah. Baby steps for baby reps. If we want to get a little internal rhyme.
Putting that in the summary. I don't think anybody will listen to this.
No, we're going to cut all of this. Don't worry. And so, there's only so much that you can sort of script out. So talk to me about like the role that you see personality playing in confidence.
God, it's huge. It's huge. You know how we said bravery is when you have to suit up to go to work, right? And there's different ways to look at that. Sometimes it's, I'm going to put on my cape and my mask, which always cracks me up when I watch superhero movies with my little boys. Oh, there's a burning bus full of nuns. Well, let me pause. I'm just going to go and change, and then I'll zip right over there. Yeah. Right? But superheroes do that because it gives them the boost. It's scary to rescue a burning bus. So when I put on my cape and my mask, I feel braver. I feel like a big deal, right? And that's, okay, great, right? But for human beings to put a mask on every single day doesn't feel good. If you feel like there's a work you and a home you, then you got some work to do. That's all there is to it. If there's a you that your friends know at happy hour and a you that your boss and your coworkers know, then you could probably be better employed. You could probably work on the confidence. You could work on the job fit a little more. I think that the very, very, very best sales reps out there let their freak flags fly. That's like, if you like your French bulldog better than your husband, work that in the first 30 seconds, because mm-hmm. we are so used to being called by sales robots that it's awful. Like the pendulum, it can shift back now, baby. Be yourself. And the scripts kill that. They absolutely do. There's a guy, his name's Jordan DeFort. Jordan, hats off, brother. He just says this craziest freaking things in the first 15 seconds of a call. And I've never seen a rep be more successful. How are you, Jordan? Well, it's costume Friday and I've shown up in my bunny rabbit pants. I'm great. How are you? And I mean, the guy will actually do this crazy shit and then talk about it, but you can't help but be like, I'm sorry, did you just say bunny rabbit?
Yeah.
And it's interesting. So a personality plays a huge part. And if you have a script or a boss or a culture or a something that's not letting you use it, first, check and make sure they're not letting you use it. Are you afraid to use it, or are they quashing the use of it? And second, make a goal to let a little bit more out each day. You're going to enjoy going to work more. Your calls are going to be more successful.
Totally. It's sort of like we were talking about earlier about sort of going to the gym and getting stronger, right? Is the more that you are, like if you're coming to the, to sort of use that metaphor, if you're coming to the office and you have this sort of second version of yourself, it's like putting on, you know, a lead suit before you go into the office. There's this extra burden, this extra weight that you have to carry.
The weight of the cape and the mask are big.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. And because you have to have two minds about everything. There's LB from work. There's LB from home. LB that's had a couple of beers, who's a dramatically different person, I'm assuming.
Actually, it's pretty much a shit show, all three of them. And this is it.
There you go.
You know what I found out this last year is that I started Girls Club, and I know that we're going to talk about it eventually, but really quick, since we're here, Girls Club is about helping more women get into sales leadership. So if you're a woman in sales and you've ever thought about leading, Girls Club is to trying to help you get into that frontline sales management or frontline to the next level. That's where we focus. And I felt qualified to start it because I was the only woman coming up, and I've been in that job and I train that stuff through my company. But the biggest surprise to me was actually feeling like a role model to these women. And I didn't have time to go create some professional persona, or like I showed up just exactly like this. And we do a thing at Girls Club called Rise Up on Record, where we get big deal women in sales to record a 3 to 5 minute confessional. Here is something I completely effed up. Here's a risk I took. Here's something I'm scared of. It's all about encouraging risk taking. And helping women see that you don't have to be perfect to be a VP of sales, right? Because the role models we have, frankly, are all on TV, right? I don't have to be a size 2 or a bitch to be a businesswoman. And we don't see that enough as women in business, especially in sales. So these Rise Up on Records are confessionals. And so I do one every single month. And half the time, Colin, I'm doing it at like 3 a.m. I've done them in a bathrobe. And I'm just really honest. And that has been the number one thing that people have loved, is they're just drawn to the authenticity. So when you're not wearing a mask to work and you're letting people see who you are, warts and all, and when you're okay to say, listen, I'm great at an intro, but I suck at a close, or right, I'm great at meeting new people, but I suck at remembering names, then all of a sudden you're human. And we call that authenticity. And I think it's a sign of an amazing rep. And it's even more important to be an amazing leader.
Totally. Very brave.
Well, that was a soapbox and a half. Sorry, let me climb back down off that freaking high horse.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, and basically the, yeah, I was trying to find a way of tying sort of LB in a bathrobe into this next piece. But I think just-
Can you tie it to a sport or a TV show?
No, no.
Nothing, you got nothing.
Nothing podcast appropriate. So let's just move on. So frontline managers. So yeah. awkward transition.
Awkward transition.
Going around the corner.
Let me check my notes.
I had a couple ideas, but I'm like, yeah, maybe not.
Live edit.
Yeah. So what can frontline managers do? This is me bringing my authentic self. Unprepared and, you know, just a little bit, you know, amateur at the podcast
thing. Are you kidding? Wait till we get to the role play that we do at the end of this. I'm going to F that up six different ways.
Oh, I'm going to roast you too. It's going to be
great. Yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be fun. So okay. What can frontline managers do? So, I think it was the Sales Executive Council did a study last year and they looked at sales manager skills and they said, what are they best at and what are they worst at? And the bottom of the barrel, do you want to guess? What does sales managers suck at more than anything else?
I guess coaching.
Nailed it. Call coaching. Yeah. Call coaching. And here's why. I'm going to be really honest. I am a shitty call coach. I really am. And I'm a horrible call coach because I am impatient and I am competitive and I like to be in control of all the things that make me a decent entrepreneur, make me or a great sales rep. Hello. Make you crappy call coaches. A call coach is about letting someone self-discover. It's about asking better questions. And most managers go into call coaching as if it were deal coaching, not rep coaching. Does that make sense, that difference?
I'd love to understand what you mean there. Because I have an idea, a picture in my head of what I think call, like what I do on call coaching. And I'm just trying to line it up to like between the two.
Yeah. So coaching is, we could go in for an hour about coaching, right? So first of all, at the highest level of the umbrella, coaching is a style of management and doing it with questions. You could be coaching me during this podcast. We can coach people during team meetings, during one-on-ones. It's a style of being asking questions and letting people self-discover. By the way, I suck at that too. So then underneath that in call coaching, that's specific to sales saying, we're going to take a specific call, right? We're going to listen to it, whether it's live or recorded. I'm going to work with one, max three people. More than that, it's a training session, not a call coaching. We're going to listen to a specific call and we're going to give feedback. We're going to talk about what's good. We're going to talk about what we can improve. And I'm going to walk away as a rep with an action item and something I'm going to work on. And when it goes well and you've got a good system, every single cadence, whether it's week, 2 weeks or a month, and it's different for all different levels of reps. That's one of the reasons managers fail is like, what? I'm supposed to be doing this 70% of my day. Have you seen my inbox? Like sales management is the busiest job in the entire world. It's not fair everything we put on these guys and gals. But every time we come together, I'm going to be getting a little better at this skill and a little better at this skill. And then I'm going to pick a new one. I'm going to get a little better. I'm going to get a little better. Unfortunately, we very rarely have that consistency. So that's one thing we can do, right? Get consistent. If you say you're going to meet with one of your reps, freaking meet with them, even if it's only for 15 minutes. The second thing we can do, you were talking about deal coaching versus rep coaching, is switch your brain around. When you're listening to this call, it's so hard, but ask yourself not to care whether or not the rep won the deal. Okay?
No.
Call coaching, that's why I suck too, Colin, right? So call coaching is supposed to be about rep development. This is about engaging your rep and giving them the development that they crave. The development is the reason they leave. Right? It's investing in them. It is a chance to go in and like help them feel fantastic about what they're doing. Reps should leave a call coaching session feeling like a freaking superhero. I can take on the world. I'm feeling confident. I'm awesome. Let me go pound the phones and spread my awesomeness. But instead, what's happening is my manager said they were going to meet with me and they didn't. Right? Eventually, he came over and just told me 10 things I was doing wrong. Like, I don't want to have this conversation anymore. I don't want to be called. Like, I just feel like shit. Stay away from me. Mm-hmm. Even top reps are craving more coaching than they're getting. So what can you do as a frontline sales manager? If you book a meeting with your rep, keep it. When you're in a call coaching session, find a way to make them feel like a superhero. The rule of thumb is a 5-to-1 ratio. Not the old Oreo of great, improve, great. Great, 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 great. Hey, how about this one thing we work on? The other tip is let the rep choose what it is they want to work on, which is so hard, right? Because you're like, oh my Lord, you skipped over the gatekeeper. These 80 things were wrong. And they're like, I think I could sound more upbeat. But we have to do that. It's about developing their career. So switch it from deal coaching to rep development and engagement and coaching. And if we could get a little more consistent and a little better at spreading the love during the call coaching, it would make a big difference.
I can see how it's so easy when you're call coaching just to jump into, oh, I heard this. Let's talk about that. As opposed to sitting back and saying, okay, what is it that you actually want coaching on? And so this is what you're recommending is
ask questions. Yes.
Cool. And let them sort of self-identify. Hey, I think I fucked up here.
Yeah.
And this is the piece I want help on.
Praise 5 times before they leave. When they decide they want help on it, ask questions. Like, you should be, it's a sales call. If you look at it like a sales call, it's easier to manage, right? Instead of talking at the customer or talking at the rep, you're supposed to ask questions and let the customer talk 80% of the time. Mm-hmm. Same thing.
I think if we were to go as deep as we want on every single one of these, this would be an 8-hour podcast and everybody.
It so would. Yeah. We do about 8-hour training right now on call coaching. And it used to be like Factorate's call coaching class was like 2 hours. And I got to tell you, you can explain to managers what to do and they get it and they have a system and they're ready and you get into a role play and the person playing the rep still feels like shit at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like that's how we've now, it's like, it takes that much practice to break the rep habits and build the manager habits. So start investing in yourself and call coaching or look for training in call coaching, read books about it. Do anything you can to develop that skill because it will take you very far in your management career.
Or just start every call coaching session with, I'm going to be a dick here and you're going to feel very, very bad at the end of the session.
And then people will line up to work for you. They'll love coming to work.
Yeah, but if you do it in a hilarious way, they'll enjoy it, right?
Right? I think you can get away with that for oh so long.
Yeah.
Right? And then they're like, how's your boss? Well, he's a complete dick, but he knows he is. So that's something.
Yeah. Definitely not the kind of place you want to be working.
Yeah. Yeah. But we don't teach our managers how to do it. I mean, it's really on us as leaders. We've got to teach our people these things. We're doing a disservice by not teaching these basic blocking and tackling rep and manager skills.
There's no degree on how to be a sales manager. There's no MBA or master's or PhD.
No.
How to be a great VP or CRO.
You're so right. And there's very little training available for it as well, which is the whole reason I freaking started Factorate and Girls Club. When I was a new sales manager, I was lost. And, you know, I did get training and it was like how to not sexually harass somebody so that it's particularly obvious or, you know, how to have a difficult conversation or how to use the payroll system and the difference between management and leadership. And it was all great theoretical stuff, but it wasn't what's the structure for a good call coaching meeting? What the fuck is a sales huddle? And how often am I supposed to have it? And pipeline, is that a team thing? Is it a one-on-one thing? What are these monthly meetings I'm supposed to have? How do I get home from work before 8 p.m.?
Yeah, 100%. And it's definitely something where there is not enough help. And we're going to get to what you do and how you help people in just a sec here, but I want to get some knowledge from you before we close out the interview.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Time's flown. Let's do it.
I know you got a hard stop and I want to get everything we can from you before we go. So how do you get people to reply to your emails?
Consistency and persistency and personality. But I will tell you that more and more people, you got to change your game every couple of years, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be that if it wasn't a form email, people started to reply to it. And now just don't do the, oh, was it something I did? Quit being cute about it. Make it short. Make it 2 sentences. Very easy to reply. Ask nicely for what you want instead of trying to be cute or trying to sell in the email. Be direct.
I've been testing out sending tasteful nudes. Great response rate. Haven't booked any meetings yet.
No meetings on that.
None. But lots of complaints though. Lots of complaints.
Colin, I've seen reps do that kind of crap. Like, here's me in my, you know, muscle shirt or, yeah, you know, you've seen some bad LinkedIn profiles. Reps will make up all kinds of crap to try to get attention. And that's, of course we do. We're desperate to get people to reply to us. So we got to manage that.
So when you're on the, I totally agree. When you're on a call and somebody's brushing you off, how do you handle that?
Yeah. Okay. So the brush off is not an objection. An objection is, I've heard something and I have an issue. It's price or delivery or, you know, competitor, whatever it may be. The brush off is, I just don't freaking feel like talking to you. Mm-hmm. So the best thing you can do to get around a brush off is to keep them talking. And you do that by never getting defensive. That's step one. Keep your ego in check. And then step two, asking a question. It can be related to the brush off or it can be completely opposite, right? So, oh, I don't handle that here. Yeah, I get you. Totally. What is it that you are doing there? Right? I'm not the right person for that. Oh, yeah. Listen, I understand. I get plenty of those calls all the time. What do you handle on a day-to-day basis? I don't have time right now. Yeah, I hear you. That is definitely at a premium. Do you have a meeting starting on the hour? Or just, listen, I'm not the right person to talk to. Did you catch the Knicks game? I mean, you can go off as well. Like, it's an automatic response. They are rejecting you without knowing who you are. So get them to talk to you a little bit longer. Get them get to know me before you reject me.
Yeah. Right on. I love it. And last one, because I want to keep you to your time here. So what do you need to push at the end of the quarter? And ideally we don't, but sometimes we do.
I know, right? Everybody's answer is, well, you don't get there. Yeah. Frankly, I'm going to go with authenticity again at the end of the quarter. You just get really honest. Pardon me. Colin, you understand that I'm in sales. My job is to hit a number every single quarter. We've been looking at this deal for a couple weeks. Do I have a shot in hell in pulling it in this month? Like, that's my best advice. Quit pretending like we don't know what everybody else is doing. You're a buyer. I'm a seller. You're talking to other people. I'm trying to hit a number. Like, can we just be honest about it?
I love that. Because anybody that's bought anything knows the game, knows that they're going to wait to the end of the quarter because they're going to get the better deal with a lot of companies. And so just being authentic, you put it right out on the table.
I got a number to hit. I'm trying to make a sales contest. What, you know, whatever it is. And see, and they're going to tell you, no, there's no way in hell it's going to pull in. Great. Hopefully you've had that conversation ahead of time, right? You got enough in the hopper to get there. Or they're going to say, well, you can if you're going to save me 10%. Well, great. You know, you got to love an objection because it's a roadmap to how to close the sale.
Love it. It's more information. It's the sales call is just a very, very slow interrogation.
I was going to say it's like dating, but that tells me a little bit about your love life.
That's a totally different podcast that nobody wants to listen to.
I still get that. After my divorce, when I started dating again, it was, oh my God, I'm so glad there wasn't a camera crew. Like, I went on it like it was an interview. Like, I was interrogating people. It's so embarrassing to think back at the mistakes that we've all made, whether it's in dating or on sales calls. It's okay.
Totally. Speaking of mistakes that we will make, let's move to podcast, or let's move to the cold call.
Oh, here we go. All right. So I'm selling Factor Eight, right?
Sure.
Whatever you want. Is that good?
Yeah.
You're a VP of sales.
Okay. Got to get into my role playing hat here. Get
right.
My best acting skills going.
My mind is completely blank right now. So here we go. No, 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 no.
There we go.
Ring, ring.
Hey, this is Colin.
Colin. Hey, Lauren Bailey with Factor Eight. How are you?
Good. Can I call you LB?
Well, I get that question a lot, my friend. Absolutely. Hey, do you mind if we cut and do that one over one more time?
Sure.
Can we do that?
Yeah.
I my mind unblanked and I finally remember what the heck I was going to do. And you were being really nice, by the way.
Trying to help. Water.
Ready. Ring, ring.
Hey, this is Colin.
Colin. Hey, LB with Factor Eight. I'm calling to see if I can save you some time onboarding your new hires. You run the BDR team there right now, right?
That's right.
Nice. Now, do you have BDRs and SDRs, inbound and outbound, or just one or the other?
Inbound and outbound.
Nice. Congrats to you. How many reps do you have these days?
Two and two.
Two and two. Awesome. And then is there a whole team of leaders like you, or are you heading up the entire sales team now?
It's just me.
Yes, stud. That's a fast path to owner of sales VP. I see initials in your title very soon.
Thank you.
Well, tell me a little bit about what you're doing right now when you're bringing on new reps.
We hire them, we give them a week on the teaching them the playbook, and then we throw them to the wolves.
Throw them to the wolves. And how are they doing? Are you keeping them? Are they getting up to speed?
No, they last about 3 months, and then we have to fire them because they're
tired. And then you start over. Yeah.
Basically repeat.
How many of them are hitting quota in those 3 months? Or is it taking longer than 3 months to get to quota?
The good ones will hit after about 3 months.
About 3 months. So it's a never ending cycle, isn't it? Unfortunately, your sales goals probably aren't going down very much.
No, and it's getting harder and harder to hit them.
And to find that talent. Yeah, I understand loud and clear. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about what you're doing to train them and develop them and keep them. I was reading a study the other day that told me that the number one thing reps are looking for, millennials especially in a new job, is development on the job. And it may be one of the big reasons they're leaving. So I think I may be able to have a solution to help you bring more folks in, get them up to speed faster, and keep them longer. That would probably suck for you, right?
Oh, that'd be terrible. Yeah.
That would probably not be anything you'd want to talk about.
I've been genuinely trying to find a place to throw an objection here, but I wasn't able to. You just had me like kept going. And then all of a sudden it's like, well, it's been a minute. I'm having a conversation. So I guess we're here
and we're here and it's time to stop. Yeah. You were very nice. You didn't throw me any dismissals. You didn't give me too hard of a time.
I was trying, but I was also distracted because I was listening intently. So.
And that's the key. The key is to get them talking. We teach reps to ask open-ended questions, but that does not belong in the intro. Mm-hmm. In the intro, it has to be about closed questions.
And there were easy bite-sized pieces that I was happy to share with you.
Bingo.
And you had all these, like, you're building and building and building. It made me, it made it very hard for me to be like, fuck off.
Well, and that's what happens. Usually it's if you're good, you can get 4 to 5 questions in before they're like, I'm sorry, who the hell are you again? Mm. But that's when you give your value prop. Oh, I'm so sorry about that. Factor eight, we're best known for doing the blocking and tackling skills for frontline reps and managers to help build confidence, keep reps on the phone.
Cool.
Oh, but when we lead with that, hi, this is Lauren with Factor Eight, and we're known for turning thousands of reps who award winning and blah, you know, they're not listening to you.
It's super easy to get shut down because you put your salesperson hat on and.
Bingo. Bingo. So we call that the swift intro. You do a little ear perk with some value. You end with some closed questions. You start to transition. You're getting them talking the whole time. And there's an art to it. It takes quite a few hours to figure it out, build it, and get it down. But once you do, you can triple the number of first bases that you get by having people stay tuned in and talking to you.
Back to your dating analogy. I love it. LB, if people are trying to get in touch with you, what's the best way for them to do that?
Thank you. You can please find me on LinkedIn if you're listening to this right now. Let's engage. I put tons of great content out there. So connect with me on LinkedIn. You can find me Lauren Bailey at Factor 8. Factor8.com, F-A-C-T-O-R, the number 8.com. You can learn a little bit more about the rep and manager training that we do. And if you know of an amazing woman sales rep that you'd like to encourage and help change the trajectory of her career, send her to wearegirlsclub.com. Tell her you see some potential. Has she ever thought about being in leadership? And then email me directly if you want me to help get her involved. We are going to change the face of sales worldwide with Girls Club.
Right on. Lauren, I totally agree. I love it. Glad to have you and Margaret on the show. This has been awesome.
It's been a ton of fun. Thank you. And I'm trying to throw a last F-bomb in, and then I'm like, no, I don't think that would make my mom very proud, but I really did fucking love it. It was great.
Right on. We'll see you fucking later.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week.